Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Sarah and I'm so delighted to be here today with the amazingly hilarious and effervescent Tammy Hennessy.
Oh, thank you for using
Did
such
like
fragrant
that?
Language. I'll take that.
Tanya, would you mind telling us a bit about your brand new book, Am I Doing This Right?
Yes, it is a, well look, it's, oh, I don't know if you've read it, but it's a really strange book for people who are lazy. So it's written, it's like short stories, sometimes they're just paragraphs, sometimes they're lists. It sort of was designed to look like nothing else on the market. Like almost like a news feed for a millennial audience who could just pick up, read an anecdote, put it down and continue with their life. But then, you know, subsequently you could read it from A to Z, which it is an A to Z, and, you know, you'd come out with a really full picture of myself. So it's like half autobiographical, half relatable lols. There's a bit of advice. It's kind of inspiring. I didn't think it was until I finished it and that was the feedback I got. I was like, oh, cool, it's inspiring. Yay!
Accidentally.
Because I think, like, I am a bit of a... can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah, I think we can.
She's
we
like,
can always beep you out afterwards.
You always say yes, but with the tone of no.
Look, yeah! I'm guilty of it.
I've stuffed up a lot in my life. And so there's a lot of, you know, stuff-ups in there, but I think I've triumphed those and... That's not to say I won't go through that again. I'm only 32. Hopefully I have a long life. But it's about rising above it and continuing even though things are adverse and hard. And I guess that's the inspirational element that I didn't realise was in there because I'm just a fighter. you know what I mean? Like, I don't see it as inspirational. I'm just like, well, how else would you do it? So
when you started writing it, you didn't necessarily anticipate it having that strong message?
No, not at all. I just was like, I just want to write something really funny, something that looks and seems and is different to anything else on the market, and something that I would want to read. Like, I have a really short attention span. Most people do. It sucks, but it's just like, we have too much content. We consume stuff so often that I wanted to create something that would be read. And I knew that a part of that would be to have it in short sort of bursts and short stories. But I wanted it to be, really, really funny, really readable. And I wanted people to come away feeling like they were less alone, because I feel like it wasn't till Lena Dunham talked about having anxiety and working as a writer that I felt, and showed her body as well, that I realised I could do it. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be cool if I could put that message somewhere and maybe help somebody else? Because if Lena Dunham never admitted she had anxiety, I wouldn't be here.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I was like, for so long, I was like, I can't do anything. I'm riddled with anxiety. Like, there's no way I can do anything. And then she was like, I have anxiety. And I was like, and you are so successful. Shit, I can do this. If you can, I can.
I do love how the stigma of anxiety and depression as well has really taken a turn recently.
Mm-hmm.
People are more honest about it. People that you can admire and look up to are more honest about it. What's really changed the conversation? I think people don't feel ashamed anymore.
No, and don't feel alone. I think part of mental health is feeling so alone in your thoughts, like no one else understands how hard this is. This is so shit.
And then it spirals and spirals.
Yes, and then if someone else goes, girl, like I'm the same. I feel like that too. And maybe they're, you know, someone like Lena Dunham, who's a big celebrity, and you go, oh shit, I feel suddenly better because you have the same thing as me and this is a human thing.
Mm.
And life is sometimes really hard.
Yeah, and that sort of cuts the heart out of a lot of what fuels those downward spirals, that loneliness.
Yes.
If you don't feel like you're in it by yourself.
In isolation.
Yeah.
You know, you just feel so isolated in that. So, yeah, there's a lot of mental health chat in there. I talk about having imposter syndrome, which I think a lot of people have. I talk about having the voice in my head that tells me I'm not good enough, which is very meta, obviously, because I was writing being... And in there, if you read it, I say, like, oh, it's really hard to write this because... I'm writing about the voice in my head, but the voice in my head is writing it. So it's a bit strange.
So you just sit back and let the voice take control?
Yeah, just for that chapter. Then I was like, get out, bitch. I don't need you. I don't need you. And what else? There's a big bit about what happens when you have a viral video and just things that probably people wouldn't know.
What is that like?
It's crazy. You just, like, because I'm a really normal person. And then I just had this, like, video go crazy. And then all of a sudden you can't go shopping without people wanting a photo with you. And it's very strange because you forget to wear a bra out. And they're like, oh, shit, yeah, let's get a photo. And you're holding your boobs up in someone's friggin' Snapchat. No, it's crazy. It's really, really bizarre, but really, like, amazing that people care enough to know who I am. And then it's scary because I'm like, oh, my God, I hope I live up to your expectations. And this is the voice in the head, you see. And this is the imposter syndrome. But I think a lot of people have it. I think a lot of people will relate to a lot of the content in the book, which is kind of good and bad. It's like sad that so many of us are anxious and live in our heads and have so much self-doubt. And, you know, but again, I want to shine a light and be like, it's okay, you're not alone.
Yeah, look, I mean, the whole concept of adulting as a thing, like, I feel like, you know, there's this, I want to get your thoughts on this, but I feel like there's a perception of millennials as being more immature than previous generations, which I really strongly disagree with. So I think we're living in a world and we're being this age in a world that didn't exist mm-hmm. for generations above us. We're in a world where, like you say, you can just become famous in a day accidentally,
yes,
just by putting some of your personality out in the world. Right. Whereas in previous generations, you had to be a movie star for like 10 years before anyone would know mm-hmm. who you were. I think,
and particularly for Australians 10 years ago, or maybe not, maybe 15 years ago, like just even getting a visa and living in LA was incredibly difficult. Now it's obviously easier. Margot Robbie, Hemsworth boys, like, you know, it is easier, but like, yeah, there was no route to, yeah, I
agree with that. Like there's this shortcut to a different kind of fame that, mm-hmm. that didn't used to exist. And it's also just a really different world.
But I like it because, I mean, yes, it is a shortcut. But I would have to say, you know, I have a degree in drama. I'm a radio announcer. I've worked my butt off. But, you know, some people, it is like, oh, here I am. I'm living this life. But the thing is with the internet is that it creates content that is niche. So you don't, like, okay, I'm not into MasterChef. It's not for me. I don't, do you know what I mean? I just can't. I can't. But there's definitely an audience for that. But online, there is just weird stuff. You know, we're talking about a weird niche podcast that you and I both listen to called My Favorite Murder. You know, and that's a podcast. Like, there's the great thing is that there's an audience for everybody, and that means people who were traditionally not accepted into normal media. Like, okay, this is in the book. I auditioned for like 150 shows and never got one,
wow.
Maybe more. But then, you know, all of a sudden you put your stuff online and people go, oh, this girl's great, and it's sort of like, yeah, just because I didn't fit into traditional media doesn't mean I can't create my own content and my own audience. And that's what the internet does. It creates, it is an opportunity for weird, eccentric people to find an audience. And I think it's so wonderful.
I mean, I 100% agree. And I guess the word shortcut is completely wrong. It's like a platform.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to go, if you've got valuable things to say, or if you just want to share your personality and your viewpoint with the world, you have a method of doing that didn't exist like a couple of decades ago. Which, you know, is just part of the ways in which the world have changed. But I just get frustrated every time I hear people talking about millennials as being so immature and needing to learn how to be an adult. My theory is, I don't know if this you feel the same way, but I don't know if I'll ever feel like an adult.
No,
and I don't think my, you know, grandparents ever felt like adults either.
The difference between your grandparents and us is that we talk about it and they didn't.
Yes.
Or they don't. Or there was no online forum about it like Facebook, you know, we're all like sharing memes and everyone's like, oh, and yeah, I don't know how to adult, neither do I. But our grandparents just shut up and dealt with it. They also had the depression and stuff like that, you know.
They did, and wasn't soft.
Yeah.
It's a totally different... Totally different generation, different life experience. But I agree, we talk about everything now. Mm-hmm. Our little inner worlds have become shareable in this amazing way.
So that's the difference, is that, yeah, they had no idea what they were doing. My mum had no idea what she was doing. They just didn't talk about it as much as us. Yeah. We just can't shut up about it. It's hard! Like, everyone just wants to be a baby again. God damn it, what I wouldn't give.
I mean, they've got it pretty easy, babies.
I just want to be, like, everything in a pram, being rolled around, someone changing my nappy.
You're upset? Throw yourself on the ground and cry.
Right.
That's really frowned on in my workplace. I don't know about you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so annoying because sometimes you do want to feel your feelings.
Yeah.
But you can't. Oh, God.
It's hard. I wondered how long it took you to write the book and what your process was.
I love this. So I'm like desperate to be asked what my process is because I had none. And I just really wanted to be a wanker about it and be like, well, my process is.
But that's pantsing, right? They call that pantsing. You wrote by the seat of your pants.
Seriously?
That is a process. There you go.
No.
Yeah. Some people plan and plot and like have chapter outlines and other people just go for it.
Well, I guess mine, obviously, it's non-linear. So there's, you know, it's individual stories. You can pick up and open the book and read a heading and read a story from wherever in the book and don't have to read either side of it to have any context for it.
Yeah.
So obviously I didn't have to plan chapters or anything like that. It took me a year, but like not full time, obviously. I was working full time in Canberra on radio, breakfast radio, and doing 2 days a week for 4 months in Sydney during those 5 days. Plus, I was doing 6 days because I was doing Sydney breakfast radio on the Saturday. So, yes, it took me a really long time.
So, a year, but when you could fit it in.
Yeah. So, I finished full time radio in November and I had till December to finish it. So, I wrote it like a lot of the. Big stories at the end, but I'd had like spatterings of other ones throughout.
Yeah.
And then I pushed back the publishing date. Well, I didn't. I begged for another 4 days because I have a voice in my head that tells me I'm not good enough, and I was self-doubting everything, and there was things I wanted to pull, and there's a lot of swearing in there as well, and it wasn't until I read like the full final draft that I was like, holy shit. Ironic. There's a lot of swearing in this, so I pulled a lot of swearing. And if you read it and go, oh, there is a lot of swearing.
There's less than there was.
There's less, significantly less than there was. But yeah, like, yeah. I hit the mic. So I went between writing and working on radio. But a lot of the stories that I tell in the book are stories that I've told on the air, obviously just written, because you can't, I don't know. You don't tell a written story on the air. You tell it verbatim. You tell it exactly how it happened, and then... You know, when you write, it's a different process.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about this before the podcast, and I found it so fascinating listening to you talk about the difference between, you know, being able to be on radio and like YouTube and stuff, just to be able to talk verbatim and like perform versus writing and then also reading out your audiobook. Could you talk a bit about that? Because I was like, I'd never thought of that.
I know.
You have this idea that creative people are just like, sure, I can do this, I can do that, I can do it all, right? But
I hate reading the audio book. I'm sorry if you're reading or hearing it's audible. I just, I'm very grateful for the opportunity, but I'm an improviser, and when I read the book, they're my own stories, so I want to tell them my own way without the punctuation or without the full stops or without the ands and the ifs and the thens. Because when you do an audio book, you have to read it word for word, and it's your story, so sometimes you just... You know, you just want to just tell the story and not worry about the punctuation. And because written is different to the way you speak. In saying that, I would say that the thing that I'm most proud of is this book reads exactly in my tone of voice. When you read it, it's like, this is me. This is exactly how I speak. But if I was to read it aloud and didn't have to stick exactly to the written word, I would make it a little bit more decorative.
Yeah. I'm really looking, like, I've bought a copy, so one of the ones that you signed today will be for me. And we didn't get a copy in advance of the signing, so I haven't read it yet, but I'm really looking forward to it, and I have flipped through it a little bit, and I will say that it really does have that tone that you're being spoken to by the author, just, like, almost conversationally, really, like, really great tone, really, really you.
And I was crazy about that.
And it's like some people struggle to do that.
I was like, this has to be like, I want it to sound like exactly how I speak. And I write for news.com, I write for Cosmo, I write for 10 Daily as well. And I've never ever been asked to change my tone or, you know, like I'm not like a writer. I'm just a creative person who loves to write,
storyteller.
And I'm a storyteller. Yeah. So I guess I feel like such a fraud syndrome, and this is in the book, and I discuss this in the book, and I'm going to talk about it here. I feel such a weird feeling when people call me an author, because I'm like, nah, I'm just a storyteller. I'm a storyteller. I don't think of myself as some incredible writer. I think that I'm a good storyteller.
Authors are storytellers.
I just get all
nitpicky about it, and I mean, there are possibly some people in the literary world are rolling around on the floor saying, no, Sarah, that's not true, but I believe it. I believe that... If you're an author or a writer...
I could not sit next to, like, an actual author, and I'd be like, I'm sorry, I've fluked my way here, I'm sorry.
They would be intimidated by you, though.
No, like, they wouldn't. They'd be like, who's this weird, chubby, overconfident girl?
That's your voice in your head.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Massively. It's really hard, but, you know, once you're aware of it, it is really interesting, because it comes to your consciousness, and you're like, oh shit, that voice is talking again.
It's really hard to ignore,
but it is something I'm really actively trying to work on, because I mean, when I was, my mum's a librarian, when I was a kid, all I, you know, wanted to do was write a book. So, you know, to be sitting here on a podcast about book writing and literature is like really overwhelming, and I think I definitely have a really big problem with identifying that this is a really great moment for me, and
I mean, look, my mum's a librarian too.
No way!
I work in a bookstore. They really foster that love of books in you as
a kid.
Oh man,
my mum made me read so many books when I was a kid. And sometimes I hated it, but I remember the first book I ever read.
What was it?
I think it was called Red Balloon. It was about a little girl who was born with, they gave her blood transfusion. I still remember it. And that gave her AIDS, HIV, made her HIV positive.
Oh my God.
Blood transfusion at birth. And she ended up passing away, and I remember being so, like, the kids at school were playing and I couldn't put this book down, and
I thought you were gonna say Clifford or something, like,
oh no. Well, I guess I did read those, I read those, but this was like a really big, like,
that sounds like, I'm gonna Google it when we get out
of
here.
Yeah, I think it's like 100 balloons or Red Balloon. Yeah, I can't remember it. Yeah. And I still remember being like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure it was Clifford and Spot and all that shit, but the book that I remember the most was this book and how much power it had over me and how I couldn't go play with the kids. And I'm a talker. I'm not a reader. I'm a talker. I am a reader. But, you know, at lunchtime, to, you know, sitting down having snacks was the most entertaining thing. And I remember for a really long time I couldn't do it because I had to finish this book. And I thought, words have so much power, and I would love one day to be able to have the opportunity to write something. I don't think it's as good as that book, but it's definitely... This book is, like, such a good book for the time that we are presently in, if that makes sense.
No, 100%. Yeah. I also don't know if we've mentioned it yet, but it has one of my favourite taglines ever. So can you read out the whole title and tagline of your book?
Oh, yeah. So it's, Am I Doing This Right? Life Lessons from the Encyclopedia Britannia.
And it's written like A to Z, tips for growing up. I love that.
Yeah.
I think that's such a great idea.
I should say, I'm going to take credit for it, but I can't. Publisher Kelly definitely was like, it's a bit of like a to and fro, because I really wanted to do Encyclopedia Britannia car, a cabaret, a night of mixed meat and song, as a cabaret.
Okay, I really love that
trend. I know, right? I know. And that is like, no one could steal that, because I'm book still...
Two, book two.
Right, right. No, no, but I want to do it as a live cabaret with meat, like a night of mixed meat and song. And she was like, that's an interesting idea for a cabaret. We're here to talk about a book, though. And she said, what if we use that as a thingy and you do it A to Z? So it's sort of, you know, both of our ideas. But Kelly, the publisher of this book, Kelly Fagans, her name from Allen and Unwood, was an exceptional, I'm going to say producer. Of me.
Probably quite accurate description. Of,
yes.
Yeah.
She's exceptional. And she's published a lot of really great books in the time that I've known her. She's so young. And I don't know. I'm just like stoked that I got to make it, and she was the person who published it. You know?
Yeah.
She's a great person. Like, yeah.
Thanks, Kelly.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly. I wonder if she'll listen to this.
Well, now she has to.
You'd want to, Kelly. How dare you?
So, possible cabaret shows aside, do you have like another book brewing?
Oh, God. You know, after I finished this, I couldn't write for news.com or Cosmo or anything for ages because I was like,
creatively depleted.
Yes, I was like traumatized because the editing process was so intense. It was like weeks and weeks and weeks, and then like I pulled a bunch of stuff, and then I was on a plane to Darwin writing frantically, and my pages were due the next morning, you know, like juju. And then I still hadn't finished the acknowledgements, I still hadn't done the epilogue. But you know what? The epilogue flew out of me. It was the one thing I didn't overthink. The ending is my favorite part, but you have to read the whole book to understand the ending because it's tied in really nicely in a nice little bow. I'm like so proud of it. The ending, I'm like, I'm a genius.
That's the voice you should be listening to. Well, forget the other
like,
one.
No. I'm either like, I hate myself, or I'm a genius. Like, there's nothing in between.
That was a middle ground. You could all be like functioning people.
I'm a genius. Oh God, no, that's obviously extreme. But I'm really, really stoked with the ending. But like, I was, you know, writing right up to the last minute, and my eyes were sore from editing and, you know, rereading and da da da. And then I was just like, I can't write. So it took me a really long time to write again for news.com and everything. And I'm loving writing again because I had to take that break, and now I'm like, so much. I have such a passion for writing. I would love to write a second book. Do I know what that looks like? No, but it is my absolute goal to write a second book, 100%.
Well, I reserve the right to already look forward to it, not having even read the first one yet.
Yes. Wouldn't it be funny if you hated it and then had to come back on here and be like, edit yourself. You're like, it was crap.
I highly, highly doubt that.
Well,
I don't think
let
it's
be,
be
known.
I can tell from the way you speak about the experience of writing the book that you've really poured yourself into it.
Sometimes too much. I think I like.
Is that too much? I don't think there can be too much. I mean, maybe for you, you have to recover. But
yeah, that's
readers,
true. I'm the one who has to like enjoy it. No, I'm just like, it's out and I'm really excited about it because, you know, it's like a baby.
Yeah.
And I don't have children, so it's sort of like...
It is your baby.
Yeah, when you do radio, you're on air for, yeah, it's 3 hours a morning, but, you know, in two-minute, three-minute breaks. And when you do videos, two-minute, three-minute internet videos. But there's something really permanent about this. And I'm really stoked that I'm going to look back in 10 years, 15 years, and it'll always exist. And the stories in there, like, some of them are really funny, and I'm really stoked that, like, that's going to be a part of my legacy.
Oh, that's really lovely. I'm getting really emotional.
I'm super emotional, girl. Like, I'm, like, dying over here. Like I said, I genuinely have a weird dysmorphia with looking at the book and identifying that I wrote it. And, like, I'm going through
tied
a
into
psychological
the imposter
time.
Syndrome.
Absolutely. My psychologist is listening to this going, oh, God, shut up.
You just got to wonder what it would ever take for your own achievements to sink in. Because, I mean, it's true for everyone, but, I mean, someone like you, you're prolifically creative and you're out there and people know you, they see you.
See, that's weird like, to me. Like, that's weird.
Does it just... It
yes,
must be such
weird.
A strange experience.
It's a weird experience because I'm really normal. Like, I'm not, you know? And I don't care about... Like, I don't dress really well. Like, these jeans are really old. I haven't washed them in ages. Like, I wore this top 3 days in a row. There's a stain on it.
I mean, the podcast listeners can't see this, but Tanya looks amazing. So, I mean, I don't know what
Thank
she's
you
talking
so
about.
Much. I do have a tan on. You know when you put a tan on, you're like, live for yourself?
I've got eyelash extensions.
Oh, I was going to say, they look really good.
It's from a wedding, right? So I went to a wedding on the weekend. I've got these eyelash extensions and it makes me feel so fancy.
You look so elegant.
Oh, thank you.
You know, Rosie Waterland does an eyelash and I think the same of her.
Oh,
every time I say,
oh,
you're so fancy.
They,
oh my God, they're so beautiful. But you look the same. Like, I'm just living. Oh. But they hurt though after a while, don't they?
Well, yeah. I mean, these are only a few days old. They're going to get to that stage where they start coming out and then you have to get infills or not.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
yeah.
a whole decision. I mean, that's future Sarah's problem.
Yeah, but right now, you are the hottest person alive.
Oh,
absolutely.
Awesome.
Oh.
Straight from the mouth of Tanya Hennessy, everyone.
Yep. Quote that. You're a fucking babe.
Now, there's something... That's the nicest thing ever. Thank you so much.
Oh, you know, I have this thing where I just say things and then see it. Also, no, it's all the way around. I see things and then just say it. Sometimes it gets me in trouble. But people think I'm being creepy, but I'm just being honest. I'm just like, oh, you're really pretty. I'm just going to say that you're really pretty.
Creepy didn't cross my mind.
No,
just
but
deeply
people,
flattered.
Are very not used to hearing compliments.
Isn't it weird? Mm-hmm. Like, you say something nice to someone sometimes and it's like they're shocked. Why?
It's so weird. It's so strange. Like, boys, when I meet them, like, even if it's in a professional sense, they'll always tell me that they've got a girlfriend. I'm like, I'm not hitting on you.
I'm just
I'm
saying
just
I like
nice.
The tie.
What the hell? It's so weird. It's so weird. It happens so consistently. I'm so over it.
Why are we all so deeply insecure and unable to accept compliments?
I don't know, but someone should write a book on that, but not me.
You kind of have, right? No.
Well, that's true. That's true. But I only wrote one chapter. I feel like I'd like a really deep analyst of it, you know, someone really, really going through it as to what being a millennial means now.
Book two.
No. That sounds like an academic paper. I just want to write funny things. Like, I wrote a chapter about fake tan.
Can't wait to.
It's not a chapter. Like, if everyone's listening, probably going, a full chapter, good Lord. It's more just like half a page.
Fake tans are mentioned in the book. Wait,
right. Which is like how arrogant you get when you get a fake tan.
It does make you feel like $1 million.
Right. I truly believe that.
Oh, I feel like I could just talk to you forever. And that it's unfortunate that, I mean, we're sort of running out of time. But there is one thing that we ask people who come in. I find that sometimes people are like, maybe I should have mentioned it before the podcast. Because,
no, throw it at me. I love an improv game.
Excellent. Okay, so it's either... What book have you read recently that you really like, or what are you currently reading that you can recommend to people?
Okay, well, I have not opened this yet, but I just got it, Colombiano.
Oh, right, by Rusty Young.
Rusty Young.
Yeah.
And I met Rusty Young because I read Marching Powder, and I met him and I interviewed him. And, yeah, I'm reading. Well, I got it.
You've got it. It's huge, right?
It's huge. And it's, like, sitting on my nightstand. And Lean In as well. I've got Lean In.
Oh, cool.
And... What's a book I would recommend to people? Oh my God, have you read J.C. Lee Dugard's A Stolen Life?
No, I haven't, but I actually do own it. That's one that I've got that I haven't
I would recommend
yet.
Reading that. It's like devourable, and I don't want to give too much away, but I love the ending of it because, oh, it's a phenomenal read. Oh my God, I just can't recommend it anymore.
Oh my gosh.
It's a bit of a
That's
random one for me.
True crime.
Yeah, I love true crime, but it's an autobiography. It's got a lot of history in it. She's so, oh wow.
Because she was it like 20 or 30 years? 20 maybe?
18? 18 okay. years. This girl was kidnapped. And it's her autobiography and it's her life story about what happened basically when she was kidnapped and abducted and sexually assaulted by this man and woman and had children to him. I feel like this is not a spoiler alert because it's history.
No, I mean, I knew that much about her and I haven't read the book yet.
Yeah, but... and she was on Oprah and she had horse therapy at the end to teach her to love again. And oh my God, this woman, what she endured, but she sued the state. Anyway, you've got to read it. I just can't recommend a book better.
That
and
is
just,
a great,
the message of the book is really cool too.
Really nicely eclectic list of book recommendations. I like that you went from...
I know, I love Wild Swans. Wild Swans is one of my favourite books. And They Killed My Father First. About to make a film about with Angelina Jolie. Yeah. And I'm like, don't you fuck that fucking book.
It's so scary and they make a movie out of something you've loved, isn't it?
I've read that book so many times. Oh, and I really like The Alchemist as well, just because I think that's a great metaphor for life and something that I often give as a gift. The Alchemist is a great book to give someone, especially someone who's going through like a time where they're a bit confused about what they want to do.
That is a great
reading.
That
explains why I've been given The Alchemist so many times.
How many times have people given
I've got four times I've been given The Alchemist, and every time I'm like, I've read this, and they're like, yeah, you look like you're going through something. I'm like, babes, that's just how I am. I constantly don't know what I'm doing.
How about again?
Yeah, exactly. Give it another read. And I have. It's a really, really good read.
Oh, you're making me want to reread it.
I love, you know, when you like, sometimes you read some shit, but like when you read a really good book and you're like, oh my God.
It can really get, like you were saying when you read the book, it's The Red Balloon.
Yeah, I think
or
that's what it was
whatever
called.
The title
or
is.
Or insert
we'll find
title
out.
Here.
Yeah, we'll find out and we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, and 1,000, do you remember reading 1,000 Paper Cranes when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Like that, fuck, that was an incredible book, To Kill a Mockingbird. Fuck.
And those books creep into you and they become part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking forward to reading your book and having some of your hilariousness and insights on life.
Well, I hope you find it funny. The number one at the top of the list is I want this to be funny, and I hope people laugh out loud during it. So I hope you. Enjoy
I'm
it.
Confident you have achieved that.
Yay! Thank you for your overconfidence in me because I need it.
Yep, just find that I'm a genius voice.
No, girl, I can't live in that state.
Maybe for a week.
I'm a genius!
Just for the rest of your book publicity tour.
Oh my God, imagine all the interviews. Tony, how are you? Well, thanks, I'm a genius.
I'm don't blown make away contact. By my own
I'm a genius. Yeah. People are like, fuck me. Who's this chick?
I love it. I hope to see that. Well, thank you so much for coming. It's been such a delight to meet you.
My pleasure.
Super looking forward to reading the book. And podcast listeners, you can get Am I Doing This Right by Tanya Hennessy at www.booktopia.com.au.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.